The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
It is, and it's a Friday. Yes. See, this is the way to do it. You take a day off on the Thursday, and you come back, and it's Friday already. And it kind of feels like a Monday. So I got it going always. Anyway, welcome to the show, the Friday show. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com. That's our home base. We stream audio on the Progressive Voices Network, on a number of other internet-only channels, and we stream video as well on, it doesn't look like, for some reason, it doesn't look like Twitch fired today. But I don't know. It didn't look like it on Wednesday. I don't know. I'm going to have to go back in and look at the settings. I know we're on YouTube. I know we're on Facebook. Anything else? I'm not sure. But hey, you can always come over to NicoleSandler.com/listen-live and find all the links to all the different places you can get the show during the live show, or come back later after six for the podcast, which is not behind any paywall. So listen, enjoy it. Hopefully you like it. You come back, you donate, whatever. So I got hit with a barrage of questions in the chat room on YouTube. How was your birthday? No audio? Oh, shoot. What do you mean no audio? There's audio. There should be audio. I think only one person's not hearing audio. You know, I always see the one person who's like, I don't hear anything. But, you know, I other people would be complaining if there was no audio. Right? Right. Okay. So everybody help whoever is that can't hear it. So the birthday. You'll notice I don't look like I have a tan. The best laid plans and all that. So yesterday, I was going to take the day off to go to the beach with my kid because she was off. And it rained, and it's raining today too. So it was not a beach day. So we just hung out here. Actually, I went to the chiropractor, which was wonderful, and hung out here, painted. We watched Animal House together because Allison hadn't seen it, and had dinner and just had a lovely day. You know, no stress over. I stayed away from the news as much as I could, which is something I try to do more and more these days because the news is really frustrating. So just moments before hitting the air, I heard a press conference with Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, and Jim Clyburn, you know, that the trifecta of of great Democratic leadership or not. Thank you, Mythical Nomad Adventure, on the for a nice donation in the chat room. I appreciate it. So I listened to the press conference, and here's the bottom line. You know, they were setting up, I guess they were saying all day yesterday that they were going to vote on these two bills. And you know what the two bills are. They are the Build Back Better, the bigger, but not much bigger anymore, bill that will be passed exclusively with Democrats through reconciliation. And the other one, the hard infrastructure bill, which has already been passed by the Senate. So just the House has to pass it, goes to Biden's desk for his signature, and it's law. Now, the reason they have not voted on that yet is because they're using it for leverage. And this was always the plan, knowing that there were some, you know, they like calling them moderates and centrists. They are neither moderate nor centrist. They are conservative, and they are beholden to the corporation. So we can call them the conservative corporate Dems, okay? So the conservative corporate Dems will, you know, are not, you know, not in favor of spending money to make life better for the multitudes of Americans living in this country. They're fine and good with spending an inordinate amount of money on military. They call it defense, but it's military. And tax breaks for zillionaires, I guess. Because, I don't hear anybody screaming about those $2 trillion in tax cuts that the former guy gave to his cronies. But let's move on from that. So they had been saying all along, and by they, I mean everybody, from leadership on down, even Joe Biden was not pushing for the House to vote on the infrastructure plan without the other part of the program, knowing that they need it for leverage to get the conservative Dems in the Senate, like the Joe Manchins and the Kyrsten Sinemas and the rest of them on board, to get them to, you know, to go along with it. And this was what they approved of months ago. They made a deal that it's going to be a two-pronged program, that they're going to pass them jointly, like one along with the other. They're going to do it at the same time. That way, they each have leverage. I'm talking about the Progressive Caucus and the Blue Dog New Dem corporate conservative so-called Democrats, so that they all have a bit of leverage over the other side. Because this bipartisan bill, it's not bipartisan. You know, this gives away a lot to the Republicans. And yes, there's a lot of good stuff in it, too. There's hard infrastructure that we sorely need. But in the other part, that's where all the money for climate change mitigation is. And we're going to deal with that a little later in the hour. We're going to speak with a guy named Colin O'Mara. He's the president and CEO of the National Wildlife Fund. And he was supposed to be in Glasgow, Scotland, for the COP26 conference this week. But the other part of his job is lobbying members of Congress. And so when this bill looked like they were going to vote on it, he wound up not going, and he's been working the phones. So because, you know, the way the day went, we taped an interview earlier this morning early this afternoon that I'll share with you. I had to pull him away from his calls to Congress people. And so I let him go back to it because that, frankly, is more important. But so the bottom line was that there's a handful, there's like five of them, of these conservadems who are saying, well, we're not ready to vote for that Build Back Better bill until we get the Congressional Budget Office score. So the CBO scores bills. Basically, by scoring, they tell you what the financial ramifications of this legislation are going to be. Here's the problem, though. Whatever the House passes out of the House for this Build Back Better bill, the reconciliation bill, will not be the final piece of legislation. It still is going to go back to the Senate because they still have to vote on it, and they're going to change it. So, you know, these Stephanie Murphy and Kurt Schrader, and there's a few others, are holding up the bill to be able to vote on both of them. They're holding it up because they say, well, the CBO has to score it. Well, they got a score today already from the, I want to get the name right, from the, God, what's the name of that agency? The Joint Committee on Taxation. Sorry, I can't read my own handwriting. The Joint Committee on Taxation is kind of the standard. It's nonpartisan, no members of Congress. It is but they want the CBO score. But it's meaningless. And all this is serving is to give the Republicans more fodder for saying the Democrats can't get anything done, and stretch things out even more. And the longer they stretch this out, the more chance there is of it all falling apart. So, but Pramila Jayapal, who chairs the Congressional Progressive Caucus these days, has been very clear about it from day one. And every time it comes up, every time Nancy Pelosi floats that they're going to bring it to the floor for a vote again, Pramila Jayapal says in her very calm, reassuring kind of way, we have a deal and we're doing them together. Now, she also reiterated that the Progressive Caucus is being pragmatic here and they will vote for this pared back reconciliation package, the Build Back Better bill, because despite the fact that so much important, really good stuff was taken out of it, there's still a lot of good stuff in it. And as you'll hear when we talk to Colin O'Mara, all the climate mitigation stuff is in there, and that's really important. But here's a little bit. So Nancy Pelosi comes out to the microphones just moments before, you know, we hit the air, And here's the start. Here's how she opened her statement. Oh, did I not cue? Oh, tell me I didn't. Oh, shit. I think I saved the whole thing. Never mind. Never mind. We're not going to do that one. Instead, because I thought I edited out the long wait until she started speaking, but apparently I didn't. But I do have this. So she did her spiel and her statement said nothing. And then she turns it over to Steny Hoyer and he turns it over to Clyburn. And they all, you know, say their thing. And none of them really said anything. And then they took some questions. This was the question that my ears perked up for.
Congressman Jayapal came out with a statement indicating that she will not support her caucus, the Progressive
Caucus, not support
the infrastructure bill if it goes without Build Back Better, that she would rather wait until the CBO score comes and that moderates are on board both. Have you spoken to her, and do you have the votes right now for the infrastructure
bill? Do you have the votes
We all speak to each other quite regularly. In fact, it's not a chance to say I spoke once or twice. It's a constant conversation among all of us in our caucus. And the fact is we believe it is necessary to pass the BIF so that these jobs can come online as soon as possible. We have waited a while. We had hoped to pass it sooner, but
yes,
we can't wait too much later for the legislation.
Well,
I do believe that there are a large number of members of the Progressive Caucus who will vote for the bill. That is my understanding. I whip the members.
Well, we're not so sure about that.
No, Mr. Clyburn has the official whip count. I have the Speaker's secret whip count. I don't tell anything that people tell me, not even you, my dear good friends, but I have a pretty good feel.
Speaker Pelosi.
Yes.
Listen to this.
You have 218 votes to pass.
Okay, somebody kept shouting out. She's like, anybody else? Anybody else? I don't know who that person was that she obviously didn't want to take her question. But anyway, so Nancy Pelosi never puts a vote on the floor without knowing whether or not she's got the votes. The thing is, she doesn't have many to spare. I think they have 3 votes to spare. What they said they're going to do now is vote on the rules surrounding the reconciliation package, because that's got to be voted on. And that then they vote on the infrastructure bill and wait, because they're succumbing to the demands of these 4 or 5 conservadems. They're going to wait to do the to take the vote on the reconciliation bill. Well, Pramila Jayapal says that's not what we agreed to. We will vote for that bill when it comes up for a vote, and that's when we'll vote for the other one. So they're still talking about voting today. It's now 5:13 the Eastern time. So who knows? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think they know. What this has served to do, though, is make the Democrats look even worse than they are. And they're bad. I can't argue when the Republicans are like saying they're like the gang who couldn't shoot straight. You think? They really are so ineffective. You know, there's no reason they had to do this today. Oh, except that they're going on recess again next week. Do you believe this? They're the Senate for 2 weeks, from what I understand. And then the House is going next week. And then they come back. And then they're out again for Thanksgiving. And then they're out again for half of December. So why? With so much on the line right now, why are they even talking about recess? That time off should be canceled right now. And Chucky, little Chucky Schmucky, should say, sorry, nobody's going home until we get the entirety of this Build Back Better package passed. Now, the thing is, they're waiting for the CBO to score it. That's going to take a week or two. It may not come in until right before December. They already have this other agency score, which is nonpartisan, which is all they need. But, you know, they insist on shooting themselves in the foot. It is unbelievable, just absolutely unbelievable. So I don't know where we go from here. In just a moment, I'm going to share with you the interview with Colin O'Mara. Again, he's the president and chief executive officer of the National Wildlife Fund. And what I found out when I got him on the line is, well, he's right in the middle of the negotiations with these handful of conservadems who are standing in the way of getting anything done. And they're setting up the progressives to blame them again. Because again, the obstructionists right now are these Kurt Schrader, Jared Golden, Stephanie Murphy, and I think there's one or two others. That's it. And so they're the ones standing in the way. So the progressives will vote against it because this is not what they agreed to. And I promise you, if you watch the corporate media, you watch the Sunday shows this weekend, which I can't stomach anymore, they're all going to talk about how the progressives wouldn't vote. The progressives are the ones who didn't vote for the infrastructure package because the media is just all about dissing the progressives. It's really, really getting annoying. And that's the understatement of the day. All right. So two things. Let me ask you. Yes, they should cancel recess. Just insane. All right. So I've got a little a musical reminder that tomorrow night or Sunday morning, depending on how you look at it, we turn the clocks back again. It's going to be I think it's daylight saving. I think we're in standard time now. It will be daylight savings time because we're going into the winter months, right? Regardless, it happens Sunday, 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. becomes 2 a.m. again. The only good part about it is you get an extra hour. And the way I sleep, I need the extra hour because I don't sleep. If I'm a little brain dead today, it's because I didn't sleep well the last two nights. So I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll do the interview with Colin O'Mara first. And then afterwards, we're leading into the weekend, so we'll have some fun with some music, including this musical reminder about turning the clocks back Sunday morning, Saturday night. Okay, all right, but let's start with Colin O'Mara. Here he is through the magic of radio. Go figure, it works just like this. I think. Joining us on the line now is Colin O'Mara. He is the president and chief executive officer of the National Wildlife Federation. So to distinguish yourself from the other wildlife groups, who are you? What do you guys do?
Yeah, so we're America's largest group. We have 6 million members. We have affiliates in all 50 states and really are kind of a grassroots-led organization. We were originally founded to help recover wildlife populations. And kind of along the way, we realized that, you know, when we save wildlife, we also save ourselves. That the same, you know, healthy air, clean water, a livable climate, obviously are incredibly important to everyone. And, you know, we've kind of evolved over the years to be, you know, increasingly involved, not just in the natural resource projects, where we do a lot of work with like forestry and wetlands and grasslands, but also helping in more urban environments, helping make sure that, you know, folks have access to clean tap water. I was just on a call just now where the community is having problems with their sewer challenges, and really making sure that those environmental justice issues, as well as the kind of natural resource challenges, are being addressed in equal measure.
Right. So I guess today there are two things that you're looking at. I understand, first of all, you're just back from Glasgow, Scotland, when the COP26 conference.
Yeah, so I was supposed to go. I ended up not being able to go because we weren't able to pass the package in D.C. So I'm actually on the Hill.
I got you.
Because we're trying to pass the, you know, the $550 billion climate package as part of the Build Back Better Act. It's incredibly important. So I was kind of tasked to help whip some books at the end as opposed to getting over to the great part of Scotland.
You didn't go to Scotland. You're here dealing with this, I guess, lobbying Congress. And right now it looks like we're held up by about five of the conservative Democrats who are saying they want the CBO scored before they'll vote on it, which is kind of ridiculous to me because this bill will change. It's got to still go back to the Senate. They're going to change what the House makes. So any CBO score on the House bill is going to be obsolete by the time they're done with it. So this is just, it sounds like more delay tactics to me.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And a couple of members are in very, very split districts, right? Places where they could, a couple of members are very safe. And there's an analysis that Speaker Pelosi just put out yesterday from the it's called the joint committee on taxation that showed that, you know, the bill was overwhelmingly paid for with the different pieces, especially if you include the prescription drug savings that were just added and some of the IRS provisions. There was an analysis by Moody's the other day that showed not only that it was paid for, but also is going to create 15 million jobs over the next decade. And so, like, we're trying to get these few members, most of them are friends. I mean, the folks that actually do a lot with us on climate and wildlife issues. But just saying, like, you know, now's the time to vote and get these pieces moving, because we're still going to have a little more negotiation in the Senate, unfortunately.
Of course. So who I know, Kurt Schrader of Oregon is one of the people holding it up. Stephanie Murphy of Florida is another. Is now Gottheimer was one of the original, as I call them, conservadems who put up roadblocks. Is he part of this group that's holding up things today?
No. So he was primarily, he was in the earlier one, as you mentioned. I mean, they were really concerned about some of the property tax deductions. And I mean, I don't know, we can talk about that separately, but there's, so those issues have been satisfied. There's a few other members that are part of Jared Golden from Maine.
Jared Golden.
One of the most difficult districts in the country. But you know, we're down to the final few. The challenge for the speaker and for the leader is that they're really, we can only lose three. Right. And so, you know, it's a matter of getting, you know, going from five to three, making that math work. And I think we're close, but I think it's hard because at this point they're not arguing for various policy pieces, right? Cause that can be negotiated. You know, it's more this other, you know, this scoring that frankly, they don't have a lot of control over the timing. And so they're optimistic it'll come out, but
maybe,
you know,
in 2 weeks.
It seemed foolish to waste another week.
Right. And today we already got the results from, I have it, the other nonpartisan agency that does scoring. It's not the CBO, but it's another one. And it basically says, look, it's paid for is what it raises, like $1.48 trillion over 10 years, which covers pretty much the cost of the bill. So I don't know what their problem is. This is like the Democrats doing this again. It's they're so good at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. And here we go. I mean, this should have been done. The progressives are with the plan, even though they're being the pragmatists here, because they have concerns. They have concerns that this bigger Build Back Better bill that includes all the climate funding, that the Senate, you know, that they can't trust Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema. So they have legitimate concerns, and I don't know what these members are doing. But let's, for a moment, Colin O'Mara, talk about what is in this bill that will help mitigate the climate crisis. Because things are pretty bad, and we've not spent any money in trying to stop the effects of climate change. So what you mentioned $550 billion in that bill. For climate, what is it going to do? What's in there that will help us?
Yeah, no, thanks, Nicole. And I've been really appreciate all the work you've been doing trying to educate folks what's in the bill, because I feel like there's been so much focus on like the politics, but not enough on the substance. And the substance is transformative.
Right.
So in the climate space, more than $300 billion of the $555 billion in the Build Back Better package is targeted at incentives for clean energy, for having, you know, more efficient appliances, wind, solar, geothermal. Making sure that there are opportunities for electric vehicles, making sure that those are more affordable for all Americans. I mean, some of these incentives in the past have really just been kind of targeted at wealthier folks, and making sure that, you know, the average family can afford some of these amazing technologies that have huge cost savings and big opportunities for reducing the emissions in folks' neighborhood. There's also a ton of labor provisions, really, really strategic in provisions around more domestic content. So frankly, more, you know, materials made here in America, more products made here in America. Which is, you know, incredibly important, because I don't want to spend the next 20 years buying, you know, solar panels from China or electric vehicles from Japan or wind turbines from Germany or somewhere.
Right.
And so a lot around domestic content, also a lot around organized labor, a lot trying to have better wages, better standards, as we're trying to make sure that clean energy jobs are actually family sustaining jobs. So that's one big piece of the package. There's another $100 billion for natural solutions. So trying to invest in our forests, our wetlands, our grasslands, agricultural lands, which combined, you know, could be 20-30% of the overall solution. There's another $100 billion to help try to transform the emissions from industry, and trying to promote more, you know, more manufacturing, but do it cleaner. You know, a lot of steel, for example, is still coming to this country from China. It's dirtier. It tends to be less kind of lower quality. Like, how do we build up that here in a lower carbon way? So achieving, you know, both our competitiveness and our environmental goals at the same time. And there's also a bunch of money for the federal government to lead. And as it's one of the biggest procurers, one of the biggest purchasers in the world, you know, having you know, the electrifying their fleet, having more clean energy again as ways to grow the market, drive costs down, make things more accessible. But I mean, it's a remarkable package that's going to reduce costs, create jobs, all while reducing emissions at the same time.
And will this, I mean, the President Biden has made a commitment to what, to cut out fossil fuels by 2030? Or so what has he agreed to, and how are we going to get to that goal?
Yeah, so the president's committed internationally to make sure that we reduce our emissions by 50 to 52% by 2030.
Okay.
He wants a kind of a clean grid for electricity by 2035, and that's going to be, you know, with a full range of technologies.
And that's not that far off. That's, you know, that's...
Oh, no. It's, yeah.
I mean, that's the near future. That's soon.
That's right. Exactly right. And you know, on the first call, getting to 50%, you know, that's from, so it's from a 2005 baseline. So, you know, going back 15 years, but it's, you know, we're only 16% of the way right now. So we have a ways to go over the next 9 years to achieve the president's goal. And then the goal ultimately is to get to kind of net zero no later than 2050. And frankly, we're going to have to do it a lot earlier, given the lack of commitments we're seeing out of China and India and Russia, some of the other major polluters. We're going to have to do more than our share. Obviously, we've obviously polluted more than our share in the past too. So there's an equity to us doing more. But they're ambitious goals. They're going to take all of us doing our part.
Well, but we're not necessarily. Wasn't there? There was an agreement on methane made the other day, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I easily could be wrong. But I think the United States did not sign on to it.
Yeah. So there's a couple different ones. There was a bigger methane framework that we were heavily involved in. There was a commitment around coal that we didn't sign on to. Uh-huh. And there's been different like little pieces. Some of those are for policy reasons. Some of those because they don't want to upset the domestic politics as we're trying to get to 50 in the Senate for obvious reasons.
Upset the domestic politics. Yes.
Further. But that's, I mean, I do think, you know, I mean, look, I mean, at a time when, you know, the largest emitter in the world, China, didn't come. I mean, not having President Xi not show up to the conference, not even send a video.
Wow.
You know, and not committing to any kind of emission reductions until at least 2030. You know, India is in a similar position. We have to do more in these international agreements. And I think, you know, Secretary Kerry's, you know, kind of done a lot to restore our standing in these conversations. But it does matter that, you know, we're not signatories to some of these bigger agreements. Like, I'm really excited we signed a big deforestation protocol that we worked a lot on, you know, from the Federation. But some of these other ones around specific types of reductions, we were a little more cautious than we probably need to be at this moment in time.
How far did Donald Trump's presidency pull us back, take us, you know, how much progress did we lose because of him?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter of the way you framed it, right? It's the opportunity cost. I mean, there were just 4 years we couldn't afford to lose. I mean, right. You know, for better or for worse, his EPA was so inept that most of the things he tried to pull back, most of the things he tried to do got struck down by the courts, often by Republican judges. And then that's how bad they were. Or conservative judges, I probably should have said, but the private sector kept going, right? The states kept going. But, you know, just given the intensity of the extreme weather we're seeing, the fires, the floods, the hurricanes, the drought, we didn't have 4 years to tread water. And that's what we did. And that's the heartbreaking part, because we had to spend all of our energy trying to prevent bad things from happening instead of using that energy to make good things happen. And that's where we're trying to make up for the lost time.
And he made bad things happen. I mean, one of the things that I recall, and this is not my area of expertise, but the California, that they wanted to do away with the new emissions standards to bring the emissions down. And Trump said, no, never mind, go back to what you were before. And California said, no, we're not going to go back. And the industry went with them. So were they able to push off the bad effects that Trump was trying to bring in? I mean,
and I think that's a perfect example, because I think California's leadership was amazing in that, you know, Mary Nichols and Governor Newsom and others. I mean, I think that, you know, they sent a signal to the market saying, like, look, maybe those investments won't be rewarded. So I think we lost on the potential of some more domestic manufacturing, because folks were like, well, wait, maybe I should manufacture in Europe or in East Asia. But, you know, fortunately, President Biden, when he first came in, one of the first things that he put into place was the framework for the new vehicle economy standards, because it is one of the easiest ways to save both a ton of emissions, but also a ton of money, right? I mean, like, you're, especially when gas is $3 and $4, I mean, you know, being in a vehicle that's getting 30 to 50 miles a gallon instead of, you know, 15 to 20, you know, is the difference between, it's hundreds of dollars a month. And so, you know, obviously we want to get to electric as soon as we can, but, you know, these are the differences. And that's the sad thing. The companies knew it was the right thing to do. Most of them did the right thing. Most of them stuck with the standards. It was the right thing for consumers, but because of a handful of special interests, you know, again, we lost 4 years of progress.
Wow. Colin O'Mara is with us. He is the president and CEO of the National Wildlife Foundation. And so wildlife is in the title. Obviously, you help, you work
Federation.
To protect animals in the wild. I'm in Florida. We have a horrible problem with the manatees. And, you know, I'm just, that's one example of things. I know Trump tried to, you know, remove some animals from the endangered species protection and things like that. Where are we on protecting wildlife? I don't know what's happening with the manatees, but I know they're dying. Are they endangered again? Where do you know?
Yeah, I mean, the case of the manatee is tragic. I mean, I was just down there, and it's a combination of the boat strikes that we're seeing, and some of that's due to water level, some of that's just due to stupidity, as well as some of the pollution levels that we're seeing is the algal blooms, as we're, you know, still behind in our Everglades cleanup, which then affects the, you know, the St. Lucie and the Classic, I mean, the, you know, the kind of the tributaries that fall out of it. Right now about one third of all species of wildlife in across the U.S., are at heightened risk of extinction. About 12,000 species we're very concerned about. And one of the things that we're excited about, though, is that it actually is an area that has more bipartisan cooperation. I mean, like when you talk about the climate agenda we just talked about, not all that bipartisan yet. There's some places around incentives that can be. But wildlife conservation actually is. And so there's an exciting bill right now that's got, you know, great support across the state of Florida that's called the Recovering America's Wildlife Act. And the bill would actually invest $1.4 billion every year towards implementing what we call the State Wildlife Action Plan. So the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission's got a great plan. They'd get about $40 million a year to implement it. And it's got Republican and Democratic support, like Marco Rubio is on the bill, as well as some of the Democratic House members. I mean, it's kind of a remarkable thing that's bringing folks together. And again, it's not that controversial, which is a good thing. And kind of in Washington, it kind of flies under the radar, but it's real money. And so, you know, we may disagree on a lot of other issues, but in this one case, you know, some critters are bringing us together.
That's good. That's good. So Colin, a few minutes ago, you said you wound up not going to Glasgow. You were supposed to go for COP26. You're going to be back. That's why you're available today, because you would have been traveling otherwise. So I'm reading about it. And Greta Thunberg, who's probably the most visible climate activist in the world right now, there's a quote from her that's kind of provocative. She said, "It's not a secret that COP26 is a failure. It should be obvious that we cannot solve the crisis with the same methods that got us into it in the first place." How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great quote about the definition of insanity, right? I mean, yeah. I do think that, like, we need to break the paradigm. And I think right now the combination of, you know, kind of the whipsaw we've seen in the U.S. combined with, you know, kind of unenforceable commitments other places, we're in a pretty, I don't want to say perilous, but we're kind of in a dangerous spot right now because, you know, the science is the science, right? I mean, it's one of the things when I get a chance to talk to Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema and others, like this isn't like a negotiation like other topics, right? I mean, there's a kind of an imperative that you have to achieve. And I do think that, you know, despite, I think, President Biden's Herculean efforts, us not having the package in place before he went, the Chinese not coming, the commitments by India and Russia being, you know, woefully inadequate, really sets us up into frankly have to spend the next couple of years convincing folks that U.S. is going to lead again. I think it does create an opportunity for the U.S. to sell a lot of products into other markets. So there's economic incentives that maybe line up. But, you know, this isn't setting up as the kind of the new day, the new dawn that I think folks are really hoping that the Glasgow talks would. I mean, I think that's going to have to get pushed again. And we frankly don't have time. We don't have time right now. And I got a 4-year-old, 9-year-old. I have a hard time looking at them when I want to put them to bed at night because, you know, we're basically mortgaging their future by failing to act right now.
That's right. You know, it's funny, not funny, but I'm older. My daughter is 22 and I'm thinking, you know, it was my birthday yesterday. I turned 62.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. But I'm thinking, all right, I'm in my, you know, silver years or whatever they call them. I'm not going to be around a whole lot longer. And so I'm good with that. But then I think of my daughter and she's got to live with this. I want the planet to, you know, be here for her and for your kids. And so we can't leave it like this. So we talked about the what's happening with the House. With the Senate, I mean, it's been Manchin and Sinema who've been the holdouts here. Sinema, from what I understand, has been open to funding for climate change mitigation to work on this. She knows it's an issue. Manchin has been reluctant because he's a coal magnate. He's made a fortune off of the coal industry, and he's just, he's immovable. But I just read that he's on board with this, that's not the holdup, although things will probably change once this bill gets back to the Senate. But where are they on this? Do you know what Manchin's, I know he wants to keep investing in coal. That's just not tenable, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I know both of them really well. And I think I have a chance to, you know, talk to both of them in kind of very candid ways.
Okay.
Senator Sinema's been on board with the climate agenda from the beginning. I mean, she had some concerns about some of the pay-fors and some of the other programs. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, she's been really, really supportive. And that's pretty consistent with where she's been historically.
Okay.
I mean, Senator Manchin, you know, I think folks always often question the kind of the personal financial interest. I don't think that's it. I mean, I think it's a cultural piece, honestly. I mean, I think there hasn't been as enough kind of alternative opportunities for employment at scale. And they've basically seen a 50-year decline. And I spent a lot of time in West Virginia. And, you know, this is the greatest opportunity to diversify the economy, right? And we keep trying to make the case that, you know, opportunities for miners aren't in things like coding and solar panels. I mean, like, folks make these arguments, you know, but there's lots of opportunities to clean up abandoned mines. There's lots of opportunities to dig geothermal wells. There's opportunities for mining critical materials that we need, some of which are in Appalachia. And so there's other things that are kind of like directly related to the skills that they need. He's been pretty consistent that he had concerns about, you know, more kind of punitive measures. But now he's been fine with the tax incentives that I talked about. Pretty much everything I talked about, he's, you know, been pretty supportive of. So we're confident at this point. It was heartbreaking to lose the clean energy electricity standard because we did think that was going to drive down emissions. We're able to keep a lot of the money for the program and put it in other places that will achieve emission reductions different ways. But I mean, I'm fairly confident that at this point, you know, he's in a good place on the climate provisions. He's obviously still raising concerns about paid family leave. He's raising concerns about, you know, a couple other the Medicare provisions. But we're hopeful at this point we have a kind of a tenuous kind of a deal that as soon as the House gets it done, like that won't be the one of the final points of negotiation.
Cool. So you're actively involved. You're calling the people, oh, yeah, who are the holdouts and to get them on board. And so I should let you go.
I got to call Congressman Case and Congresswoman Murphy in a few minutes.
Oh, so. My goodness. Well, you go do that. I'm in Florida. Tell Stephanie Murphy that she needs to get on this already and stop
the
nonsense.
And the irony with her is that she's great on the climate stuff. I mean, she's been leading on that for years. Yeah, she's been really helpful on the climate piece. But it's just like this, I don't know, the fiscal insanity around some of it where, you know, given what we're spending other things on, kind of where the debt has gone in the past, the fact that this already does pay for itself.
Yeah,
it's just maddening.
You know, even at the $3.5 trillion level, which was already a compromise from where they started at $6 trillion, which frankly we could use because our infrastructure has been neglected since they built
FDR.
The first highways. Yes,
since
hello.
FDR,
since it was like that first,
Eisenhower.
First investment and then nothing more. And we've watched the whole world pass us by with high-speed rail and high-tech whatever. And so it's frustrating, right? So it was already a compromise. At the $3.5 trillion over 10-year level, which it should have gone through, that would have been, say, $35 billion. Yeah, my math is off, but it would say they already allocated double that for the military for a year without blinking an eye. So that goes through military spending, no problem. How much do you want? We'll give you $10 billion more, which is what they did this time, and stuff that we need to bring this nation in line with the rest of the civilized world that they're balking at.
Well, and I think the hard thing, too, is that the fact it was paid for, right? I mean, it wasn't like we were going to borrow $3.5 trillion from China.
No.
I mean, almost every dollar of that package was paid for. So the
right.
Inflationary pressure would have been almost nothing. You know, there might be some deadweight loss in the economy, and you can argue the effectiveness of government spending versus private spending. But, you know, it's unfortunately, I think, so much the early negotiation was over the top line number. Instead of having the conversation, which I was hoping to have, saying, like, hey, what do we need to get done? Like,
right.
To be a modern society in this era, you need paid family leave, right? You
Hello.
Need to have, you know, a safety net that actually works for folks. And folks should be working, of course. But, you know, let's create the jobs of the future. I mean, I'm really sad that the community college fell out.
Because, me
you know,
too.
This is outside my Federation hat. But, like, that's the path to the middle class,
of
right?
Course.
And that's a way to train up an entire generation. I worked really hard on the Civilian Conservation Corps, working with a lot of the other groups. Because I think that's one of those opportunities where you're not just creating a year, right? You're creating a new pathway for a career, right? New opportunities and new exposure to new people and everything. And so I think that's the part that I think was missed. Like, this was a transformative moment to really create opportunities for folks in places that have been left behind for decades. And we're going to do a lot of that, but it's not what it could have been.
Right. Well, let's get this done. And then maybe, you know, hopefully we get this done and people start seeing positive change that, you know, the Biden's polling numbers might turn around a little bit before next November. Everything hopefully will turn around a little bit before next November. And then we have the opportunity to do more to build on this. But if we don't get this done, no one's going to vote. No one's going to have a reason to vote for the Democrats anymore.
Well, and that was the case I was making to some of the holdouts today, the couple I talked to. It's just like every week we delay means it's less likely the projects go on the ground before the midterms.
That's right.
Like if folks can't see it.
That's right.
But and this was sort of the problem in 2010, right? Where they saw some like the individual mandate penalties and things like that, but they didn't see like the benefits yet, right?
Which they did after a few years. So let's get this going so people can start seeing the benefits and realize that the Republican Party is not the way to go. That if they want a better life for themselves, for their kids and their grandchildren, you need to do something. You need to make an investment in our future. So get it done. Colin O'Mara.
I'm working on it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'll let you get back to it. Appreciate your time.
Appreciate it.
You take care.
Thank you.
Yeah, Colin O'Mara. So he went back to make his phone calls, and I guess he didn't get very far because none of them gave an inch. So I don't know where we are now. I should have actually pulled up like C-SPAN or something while that was running, but I didn't because it's Friday and I'm half brain dead. Anyway, so... And that was interesting, right? So he's working on it, but it looks like they're just going to take this vote this afternoon. But here's a segue for you with, so the chat room educated me during the interview and I was right. We fall back an hour. So we gain an hour because at 3 a.m. Saturday night, Sunday morning, we turn the clocks back to 2 a.m. So you get to repeat the 2 o'clock hour. I hope it's a good one for you. So we gain an hour, but we are on daylight savings time now. When we set the clocks back an hour, it becomes standard time again. I saw somebody, I don't remember who it was, but somebody in Congress introduced legislation to just make it daylight savings time year round, which I think is what they do in Arizona. But anyway, so that's that. If you need some help, like a musical reminder of what's happening this weekend, well, I found this little ditty online. It's from two guys who call themselves 2 minutes, 22 minutes. Sorry, I shortchanged them there. 22 minutes. What? Patty Murray, and they also do it in Puerto Rico. And somewhere else. Okay, cool. So Patty Murray introduced the legislation in the Senate to make it daylight savings time year round. All right. Without any further ado, here's our daylight savings time or standard time changing the clock stupidity song of the year from 22 minutes.
If it's 12:30 in Newfoundland. Be about 11 in Sudbury, 9 a.m. in Saskatoon, Dartmouth about to start curling at noon. Deal breakfast in Winnipeg, getting some parlor coffee and farm eggs. Early yet back in B.C., it'll still be 2 hours till Kamloops has woke up. But in Whistler, only a minute till Toka.
In Manitoba, time is central. This was essential for making sure the trains had run smooth.
Mountain time seems uneventful. Don't be judgmental. It helps the week get down to Duluth.
From Athabasca, you go back to Chilliwack. If you go west, you're gonna know you're always gonna gain an hour. From Beaver Lodge, get out of Dodge, you lose three more. If you go all the way to Sky Dome or Niagara Skyline Tower.
How can we help it if it gets a little hard to track? Springing forward just in time to go and fall back. Was the perfect plan for the 19th century when the cell phones were still only 1G.
Now here's some daylight saving time history. In Germany, they went from 3 to 4 during a world war, so Britain thought that it should copy. Canada does what the king says. This was before Liz, with Georgia 50, we're not sloppy.
They chose the same date in the States because it helped not running late when all the free full of munitions needed sorting.
Woodrow Wilson knew the drills before the $100 bill. It's the reason we remember Robert Borden.
We had a tendency to want to get some sunlight and make sure that all of our business days were done right at 5 o'clock, and so we monkeyed with the time zones coast to coast from Mount Pearl to Redstone.
And in the middle in Kingston, home of the headstones,
Bancroft, Ontario, land of the gemstone.
Now you know about daylight saving and time zones.
Well, kind of, sort of. All right, so they're called 22 Minutes. You can find them on the YouTubes. And obviously, they're Canadian because that, you know, 1 week is the song they were parodying there. I just got a thing. YouTube, heads up. We've detected copyrighted audio and video in your stream. Your stream may be temporarily blocked. It was a song parody. Damn it. Anyway, 1 week, originally done by Bare Naked Ladies, Canadian band. So these two guys, obviously Canadian. So Joy says, who is this? I missed it. Had a phone call. So whenever I play one of those song parodies to give credit where credit is due, I also post it on the blog where I post the podcast. And the podcast, I do both the audio and the video. I embed the video at the bottom and give you links to whoever we talk to. So if you want to see that again, you can certainly find it. It'll be posted later today at NicoleSandler.com/, you know the format, come on, /11-5-21, because that's the date. Got it? All right. I told you, sorry, those of you listening audio only, I was telling the people in the YouTube chat room about one of the chatters. I'm painting his kitty cat named Mr. Tank, and it's almost done. I just have to do the finishing touches and the whiskers. But this is a good reminder that, you know, we're coming up on the holidays. And should you want a lovely pet portrait for a friend or a family member, now's the time to reach out to me. You can email me, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. I've got four. Well, if I count that one, five going on at once right now. But I have none booked beyond that. So this is a good time. Or if you'd like to give a gift certificate to somebody to get their own pet portrait done, you can do that too. Just send me an email. We'll talk. Okay. We'll talk. So I just got to show you the latest from Florida. You know, we have this governor who is just reprehensible on every front. You know, now, so Joe Biden, who announced like a month or so ago that there was going to be a mandate for private businesses, a vaccine mandate for any companies with 100 or more employees, but they didn't have a start date. Well, now they're saying it's going to take effect in January. Ron Death Sentence says, I'm going to sue them. I'm going to sue the federal government. He's such a fucking moron. Well, to show you what a child he is, this is an 18-second clip that the recount pulled. But in it, you'll hear or see, depending on if you're watching or just listening, the moron Death Sentence think he's funny. So we know about the, you know, I guess I should say this, for those who don't know what Let's Go Brandon is all about. This is a meme. Lauren Boebert and some of the other right-wingers are wearing like Let's Go Brandon emblazoned masks on the House floor when they wear a mask. So this is the thing. What happened was at a NASCAR race a few weeks ago, NASCAR, obviously very, you know, Republican heavy crowd. And there was a driver named Brandon who was racing. Well, a chant came up from the crowd that they were chanting, fuck Joe Biden, fuck Joe Biden, fuck Joe Biden. As they do, right? As one does. So in the broadcast booth, one of the announcers didn't know what they were saying. And he's like, oh, listen to them. They're chanting, let's go, Brandon. Let's go, Brandon, for this driver named Brandon. Well, that's not what they're saying at all. So the Trumpers, and it's kind of clever. I'd probably do the same thing. But they've embraced let's go, Brandon, as their mantra, knowing that it's... you know, it's code for fuck Joe Biden. So keeping that in mind, have a look at my governor. More on death sentence.
When you look at the Biden, the Brandon administration in terms of what they're doing.
So funny. And now the crowd starts chanting, let's go Brandon. Fuck Joe Biden. Yeah, you know. But he's such an idiot. He's like, he says Joe Biden, then he realizes he can say, oh, Brandon, and get the... Yeah. Everything about that man is offensive. Everything about him. And I just read something. God, I should have pulled it. That the Democratic Party is not going to really fight back in Florida. That idiot is on the ballot next year. November 2022. More on death sentence is up. It's first term. He's up for re-election. I have interviewed the three candidates who are challenging him. We have Charlie Crist, former Republican governor of Florida, now a Democratic congressman from the Tampa Bay area. Nikki Fried, who is the Florida Commissioner of Agriculture, which is the only, she's the only Democrat in a cabinet level position in the state of Florida right now. But this is the first elected office she's held, and she's, it's the only one she aspires to. And our guest who we just had on Monday of this week, Annette Tadeo, who's now a state senator from Florida. She ran with Charlie Crist as his running mate the last time he ran for governor when he lost to Voldemort, Rick Scott. So those are our three candidates, and none of them have a huge buzz. None of them are like the standout candidate. None of them are rolling in the bucks. And the Democratic Party basically said, we're not going to sink a whole lot of money into this race because death sentence is rolling in it. We have no momentum there. We're going to put our money in places where we have a better shot at winning. I really think I need to, you know, figure out where to move to because this is just not good. It's just not good. Oh, we're so screwed. But the weekend's here, so that's a good thing. There's a few other things I wanted to show. You know, I've got stuff that I always come to the program, always, mostly, usually, with too much material, more than I'll be able to get to in the course of the show. That's just a standard broadcaster thing. It's show prep. You have more than you need so that if something happens, you've got enough stuff to, you know, to play with. So I've got some stuff on here. Of course, this one does not want to load. Let me try to do it on this computer. This is why I have two computers because the built-in redundancy. But this one I've been sitting on for months, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about Aaron Rodgers. Just I didn't know who he was until he's the quarterback for the Green Bay, whatever cheese people, whoever they, whatever their name is, the Green Bay, Wisconsin football team. I'm just drawing a blank. Sorry, I need sleep. Anyway, Aaron Rodgers, who was one of he wanted to take over for Alex Trebek as host of Jeopardy, right? So, I liked him on that show. He was like fun. He was casual. He was funny. He was, you know, he was good, and I liked him. I liked his persona, and I like the Green Bay Packers. Is that what it is? The Green Bay Packers. The fact that they're a socialist team. You know, they're owned by the people of Wisconsin. Anybody can buy a share in the team. So it really is like a socialist team. But my opinion of him changed completely when we found out he got COVID, and he got COVID because he's not vaccinated, but he was asked point blank in a press conference and he lied about it. He said, they said, are you vaccinated? He said, yes, I'm inoculated. He's not. He's not. And he's not. So it's just, yeah, my view of him has diminished greatly. But, you know, if some of these athletes who are, you know, who are balking at getting the vaccine, maybe they should show him this video or show them this video. I don't know what year this is from, but it's got to be like early 60s or something. What? He said he was immunized, not inoculated. He said he was immunized.
And another thing about him?
Yeah.
He went to Cal, which is a pretty decent school.
Okay. David, they can't hear you, and you're telling me. So he's apparently a smart guy. Whatever. He did something really stupid here. So I'm thinking somebody should show him this. It happens to be Muhammad Ali.
September, because that's the law. The law says if your kids don't have their shots for dangerous diseases like mumps, measles, and polio, they aren't getting into school. The law also says they must go to school. So you have no choice. Get your kids their shots. Call 349-2664 to get free shots now. Remember, no shots, no school.
No
it's
shots, no school. No shot. That's Muhammad Ali touting vaccines for your kids. They're good enough for your kids. They're good enough for you. And then I read that this idiot called Joe Rogan to find out about his experience with ivermectin. And he took it. Any respect? And I didn't really have respect for him because I don't know him. I'm not, you know, not a sports person. But any modicum of respect that I had for him is gone. It's done. It's history. Yeah. So with that, I'm just waiting for the weekend to begin. Can you tell? I've checked out already. So I thought we'll go out. I'll play you one more song because our friend Lauren Mayer has a new one out. And she just dropped this. I mean, it came out literally 5 minutes before I went on the air, maybe 10. But, you know, you get the idea. And this one honors one of our favorite members of Congress. I know you guys like Katie Porter as much as I do, right? Because she's just awesome. So this one is called Katie Porter's Whiteboard. It's the brand new one from Lauren Mayer. And it goes like this.
The hallowed halls of Congress have seen many points of view, deliberations all throughout the years. Lobbyists and special interests muddy the debate. Who will come along and make things clear? Katie Porter's whiteboard.
Whiteboard.
It's Katie Porter's whiteboard where she lays out all the facts. Armed with graphs and data, she's thorough and exact. Watch her cut right to the chase. Puts those fat cats in their place with the fastest marker in the West. And Katie Porter's whiteboard.
Whiteboard.
She called out big bank CEOs about employee pay. Got free COVID testing from the CDC. She showed us how Big Pharma jacked up prices of their drugs. Who gives a strong dose of reality? Katie Porter's whiteboard.
Whiteboard.
It's Katie Porter's whiteboard where she lays out all the facts. Armed with graphs and data, she's thorough and exact. Watch her cut right to the chase. Puts those fat cats in their place with the fastest marker in the West. And Katie Porter's whiteboard.
Whiteboard.
When mealy mouth executives tap dance around the truth, she cuts them off with calm efficiency. Repeating, no, not good enough, reclaiming my time, and soon she'll dry erase their dignity. If that whiteboard doesn't make the point, she may resort to props. Some M&Ms or bags of rice will do. She's gonna win the argument, they might as well give up. Who knows who's next? Let's hope it isn't you. It's Katie Porter's whiteboard where she lays out all the facts. Armed with graphs and data, she's thorough and exact. If money's all that you are chasing, you may find that you are facing the fastest marker in the West. And Katie Porter's whiteboard. Her opponents will be quite floored by Katie Porter's whiteboard.
Woohoo! Yeah, Katie Porter's whiteboard. Yeah, Lauren Mayer and Carla Ulbrich. That's her musical accompaniment and co-writer on that little ditty. I thought that was a good way to end the week, right? It's been a weird week. They're all weird at this point, right? I don't know what the answer is. Just to unplug and have a weekend. So that's, you know, that's a good thing about a Friday, is that you got the next couple of days to do that. Or at least I do, because I'm going to walk out of the studio after I post this show, and I'm going to stay as far away from the news as I can, because it's just too damn depressing. And we get an extra hour this weekend. Lucky us. The thing is, I can't figure out now when Jackson gets me up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Is it going to be 4 or is it going to be 6? Because my mind just doesn't grok it. I guess I'll find out Monday morning. Or I'll find it. Yeah, I'll find out, you know, Sunday or something like that. Whatever. All right, we're done. That's it. That's the week. Stick a fork in it. Thank you for listening. Thanks for all the kind birthday wishes. Thanks for bearing with me as I took a day off. Thank you for being here. Those of you who support the show financially, I thank you doubly or triply. All right. We'll see you Monday. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Bye. And I let that end so I can cut it there and send it out to Progressive Voices and the other stations who carry us on a delay of 60 minutes. And then I leave you with the news. And it's, you know, it is what it is. I just report it. I don't make it. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The House adjourned Thursday night just after 10 p.m. as Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her leadership team struggled to round up the votes to pass the Infrastructure and Build Back Better bills. They returned to pick up where they left off Friday morning at 8 a.m. But it seems that the so-called moderates in the Democratic caucus are holding up the process. They don't want to vote on the Build Back Better bill until they get a score from the Congressional Budget Office, which could still take a bit of time. However, the nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation did release its preliminary analysis of the legislation and determined that the Build Back Better Act would raise $1.48 trillion in revenue over a decade and was unlikely to add to the deficit long term. But that's not good enough for them. As of 10:15 Friday morning, those conservative Democrats are huddled in the Speaker's office demanding the CBO score before they vote. Congressman Kurt Schrader of Oregon telling Punchbowl News that there is no resolution to their demands. Steny Hoyer saying there's no way the CBO score will be readied and released before the end of the day Friday. So what's the urgency here? Congress goes on recess again next week. I'm not kidding. Priorities, people. Anyway, the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol riot is reportedly speeding things up as concern grows that their work would be shut down if the 2020 midterms result in a Republican majority in the House. The panel was in court Thursday to fight the former guy's efforts to withhold documents regarding what happened in the White House on the day of the insurrection. Well, on Friday, the committee is scheduled to hear from Jeffrey Clark. He's the former Justice Department official who pushed baseless election conspiracy theories and consulted with Trump before the insurrection. In fact, this is the guy that Trump threatened to replace acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen with. So again, Jeffrey Clark testifying on Friday. Meanwhile, Representative Benny Thompson, who's the chair of the Select Committee, said that about 20 more subpoenas have been readied and are about to go out, too. On Thursday, Judge Tanya Chutkan reportedly appeared unconvinced by Trump's arguments, at one point saying, quote, "The January 6th riot happened in the Capitol. That is literally Congress's house." Well, unless the court intervenes, the archivist will ship the first batch of those documents to the committee on November 12th. That would be next Friday. And we now learned a little more about the behind-the-scenes efforts of the committee as Liz Cheney, the Republican vice chair, let loose a bombshell, telling Politico that they'd already interviewed over 150 people in connection with the events of that day and how they unfolded. Stay tuned. So some things never change. Senate Republicans on Thursday did what they've been doing, obstructing whatever the Democrats bring forward. This time, they again filibustered, blocking an opening debate about the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. So the idea of doing something about the filibuster has once again been resurrected. Now, for those of us wondering where Merrick Garland is, the Department of Justice filed a lawsuit against Texas regarding their new voting restrictions that, among other things, bans 24-hour and drive-through voting, allows more access for partisan poll watchers, and imposes new criminal penalties for violating voting laws. All of those new voting restrictions enacted to suppress the minority vote. But that bill, backed by the Texas Republican-led legislature and the governor, Greg Abbott, imposes new criminal penalties for violating voting laws, bans 24-hour and drive-through voting, and allows more access for partisan poll watchers. Well, Kristen Clark is head of the DOJ's Civil Rights Division, called these new restrictions in Texas, quote, unlawful and indefensible. Then Greg Abbott tweeted, bring it. The Texas election integrity law is legal. And finally, some good news to kickstart the weekend. The U.S. economy added 531,000 jobs in October, and the unemployment rate dropped to 4.6%, down from 4.8%. It's still up from its pre-pandemic low of 3.5% in February 2020, but down significantly from January of this year when it stood at 6.3%. So this new data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics also showed that a late summer labor market slump wasn't quite as bad as earlier thought. Officials revised upwards their August and September payroll reports to show that hiring had not slowed as dramatically as they initially thought. And there's even some good news about women re-entering the workforce in large numbers in October. Some 251,000 women over 20 re-entered the labor force in October, and 138,000 took jobs. More good news, please. We really need it. I got good news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.